ready.
Just relax and enjoy the ride.
Your family is prospering in the new global economy, at least to the extent they deserve. For the next couple of hours, I will be your content provider.
Streams. We got a good chat room contingent up there tonight. Hopefully some of you are going to call in and kick in your two cents worth as well, because it's obvious you got some things on your mind. The dial-in telephone number, landline, is it's a Philadelphia Exchange, 610-616-5187. That's 610-616-5187. On Skype, you can come in directly. Simply use your Skype client to search watchman.live, and that's actually the preferred way to do it. With me, if you haven't been around for the first hour, which was really not an hour, it was a lot longer than that, but, well, we stretch time around here anyway. Gordon Comstock and Visigoth, and loosely, I guess... Where did we leave off in the last hour? And
all I wanted to do was finish two things. My thought, which left me just before you went to break, and that is about my idea about paying the taxes. And I pay the IRS. You know, my feeling is the Lord knows it's okay. They'll take care of me, but, you know, just pay, give Caesar what Caesar's. And there's another scripture I've talked to Gordon about. When he talks to Peter and says, well, who paid taxes? The king's children are strangers. He says, strangers. Well, we're strangers. You know, we're peculiar people to this world. So we do it. He understands it. It'll be okay. That's my take. Secondly, folks, if you want to, you can find the beauty piece about this. Type in a search engine, guaranteed retirement accounts. One of the websites is called shareprosperity.org. Read the propaganda there. You're going to love it. Like Carlin said, you know, it's got to be a dream, because you got to be asleep to believe it. At any rate, so that's what I wanted to finish up.
Wow,
with
that's
regard
perfect.
To
wow, I like that quote.
Hey,
it's true.
Randy.
Yeah.
I want to make a comment about your bumper music.
Uh oh.
No, nothing bad at all. It's just it just dawned on me that there is a tie-in to the topic of this show. That first song you played by Joy Division. The lead singer was named Ian Curtis, and he hung himself at age 23, and he just made a three albums, and one of them came out, actually two of them came out posthumously. Well, if you read his lyrics, the guy was extremely gifted in a metaphysical sense, in a poetic sense. His lyrics are extremely profound, especially for somebody that young. And his lyrics, you read them, and they're all about desperately searching for a meaning to life. And, you know, I know there were other factors involved in his suicide, but what has always struck me as being the foundation for his suicide, along with the other stuff that was going on, was he was the product of a godless socialist school in a godless socialist nation,
yeah.
England.
Yeah.
Whenever somebody is looking for the meaning of life like that in their lyrics, and it's very obvious, it is a cry for who's my creator? Why am I here?
Well, and that was the dominant mode. I know we came up in the chat room as well about, you know, playing that, and not in a bad way at all. But if you look at and this goes into the whole culture thing, but the dominant mode at that point in time, and especially, you know, the bands that came after punk, and yes, we do have a Skype caller on the line. Jason Glander 13 has joined us on Skype, and Jason, just hang out there for a minute there. What was I saying? Basically the religion that they were fed at that time was nihilism. It was hopelessness, which
yeah.
is actually a socialist Marxist cultural phenomena. It basically sows hopelessness in to the culture and then offers, you know, bromide solutions, which go right to the core of what was formulated as a socialist communist agenda.
Yep.
I hear a little girl in the background.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool. I like that. This child will grow up to be hopefully the seed of the future, if we have one.
Yeah, tell me about it.
You know, because, but then we fall into nihilism too, and see, I get to that place as well, and I think what I saw in the chat room being expressed, you know, how do we battle all of this? How do we deal with it would be a better question, I think, because we have to deal with it. We live in this place and time.
Randy, you know what's an even bigger question to me, and maybe you guys can relate, I don't know, I think you can, but we're at a certain point of acceptance about this, but our spouses, even though they be in Christ, they're not at the point where we're at. They.
Mine is.
yeah, okay, well.
Mine is, we know the deal.
Yeah.
Why don't you bring Jason home?
Okay, Jason, you there?
Yeah, I just had to hit the mute button for a second.
Hey, thanks, I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call for the most part. I don't really have much to say besides the fact that I find it most interesting jumping on the line preceding my doing so. You guys are talking about nihilism, and I just barely looked up that word just today. As a matter of fact, I did a web search for the word because I actually came across the term probably several years back, maybe, but didn't really care to understand the purpose of it or the meaning of it. But today I actually looked it up because I was listening to a Zeph Daniels podcast, as a matter of fact, through which I heard about through the Threshing Floor, and which compelled me to actually do some investigating. But nevertheless, I'm digressing a bit. But
well, let me ask you this, Jason. That word is fresh in your mind. Why don't you give us your take on what you got out of that? Because I dropped the word out there. I know what it means. I didn't define it. Maybe you could supply us with your perspective on what that exactly means.
Well, from what I gather from what I read about it, it was basically in its primitive form defined as hopelessness in any particular section or subject or on a grand scale, but and I'd like to think that, life isn't hopeless, but I also understand the concept in which Zev Daniels was actually trying to hammer along was the fact that our existence is not in and of itself hopeless, but the material realm in which we find ourselves at this point in time is, in fact, hopeless because nothing that we... I mean, all the circumstances, situations, our own personal problems, and everything else that we find ourselves in on an individual level is, in fact, hopeless apart from Christ. And primarily, the purpose in which I actually was intending to call in for was I live in South Central Kansas. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado. I actually left Denver, Colorado back in August of 08 on account of the fact of the Democratic National Convention. I was just like, man, at that point in time, I pictured Denver sustaining some sort of a devastating attack and for that particular reason, I felt it necessary to flee to South Central Kansas. But nevertheless, I mean, as of this point in time, I work in a meatpacking plant, which is the reason, the most specific reason that I was compelled to call in. But it is 80% of the employees are in some form or fashion illegal immigrants, and I have actually found myself contemplating I wouldn't even say necessarily things in which I would actually be compelled to action, but I've actually, you know, thought about possibly getting a hold of the Attorney General of the state of Kansas or the Attorney General of the United States to compel a raid in which they actually swamped in and actually...
You're thinking...
Enforce the law.
Okay.
Enforce the law. And the thing about it is I'm realizing to myself, because I'm shoulder to shoulder with illegal immigrants that can barely speak a lick of English, and it's like, I actually have a sense of compassion for them because I understand the fact that they're just trying to go along to get along.
They're part of the same world system as well. I mean, the system... basically has forced upon all of us some level of servitude. And I think you know that.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they are illegal immigrants, I don't know if they're worse off than we are. We're enemy combatants under the edicts of Frankie the Red since 1932.
Can I speak to this?
Sure, yeah.
Jason, I understand how you feel. I saw this happen in New Jersey before I left. I thought it was a phase. I didn't realize that it was a planned situation. The immigrants themselves are being used. They don't know it, but you cannot blame them, and I know you're saying this, for wanting to get a job somewhere somewhat better than what they had. The fact that they have been forced or coerced out of Mexico is another thing. Please understand something. There's a book out there called Camp of the Saints, by a Frenchman, Race Bell, came out in like 75. I mean, there's some racist rhetoric in it. My only point was, what I thought was interesting, was that Race Bell said one of the plans, quote, the plans, was to force third worlders out of their nations to invade, if you will, or infiltrate or swarm over, whatever you want to call it, traditionally prosperous Western and Anglo-Saxon nations. And
well,
that's what's happened.
But it's more specific than that, and it goes back to Samuel Morse, he was warning about it in the early 1800s.
But the thing is, what Jason's experiencing, which I have, and I live in Florida, so it isn't beautiful down here, and you're out in California, and you can see it for yourself, too.
Oh, we're overrun.
Well, but I mean, the people themselves, they're just trying to make a buck. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
The thing is,
but
the thing that they've been introduced here, which, okay, and here's where we go to things that don't make any sense, which Americans are making sense out of. We have a diminishing manufacturing base that's been going on for, 40 years? We have less opportunity, and we have more people in. This is not a good thing. This is the old lifeboat thing. How many people do you want to bring into the lifeboat before the whole thing sinks? And this is a planned thing. This is something that's being done both to us and to the immigrants. And Jason is, you know, you're in between a hard place and a rock. And I doubt you could get any satisfaction from the Attorney General because they all know what's going on, but they won't touch it. And you got to wonder why that is. So, brother, I hate to say this, but, you know, I understand your pain. I know exactly where you're at. But this is something that's being done to both of us to get us pissed off enough to fight each other, which is what they want. Basically, that's what they want. They want this nation to be as divided as possible along racial lines. And they probably will succeed. I hope they don't. But, you know, Jason, what you told us here, I mean, firsthand, is what's going on. And
not just in my part of the country.
No.
It's going on all across the country.
Yeah, I saw it in Jersey. I see it in Florida. You're right. It's happening everywhere.
From coast to coast. And
yeah.
And my thing is, I understand the fact that they're being used as much as anyone else is being used.
Right.
And my biggest problem is not holding a sense of resentment towards the illegals as it is holding a resentment towards the corporation that hires illegals, and because they're doing it for a purpose. They're doing it for cheap labor. I understand that completely and totally. I mean, they can suppress labor wages by hiring illegals because illegals have never even heard of the concept of bargaining, let alone collective bargaining, which I'm not a union type of guy. I've never been a part of a union in my 31 years on this planet, but the fact of the matter is they don't have any sense of negotiation on account of the fact that they're illegal and they're just grateful to be here, and they're being used to suppress those who would be willing to collectively bargain or unilaterally bargain. And oh, man, it's just like I'm grinding my teeth because, I mean...
Well, there is no bargaining. There's no bargaining left. If you have a job, your terms of employment...
You better be grateful.
Yeah, your terms of employment largely are spelled out to you the day you walk in the door. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, Pennsylvania is basically a work-at-will state, which means the employer can terminate for any reason at any time. So, effectively, you're a temporary employee just like everybody else. As is
the case in the state of Kansas, but
yeah,
I'll
yeah.
let you continue.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be right-to-work states that where it was more difficult, and I'm not sure that was a good thing either. Yeah, go ahead.
I live in one, and believe me, it's not. It's just another reason, you know, to do whatever you can do to the labor force. And this is another thing, too. And Gordon wanted to bring this in, and what Jason has brought up has kind of led us into this, and I don't know that we want to do this now, but if we want to, and that is to take a look at the 10 planks of the manifesto of the Communist Party and take a look at what has been realized here, and that is not a coincidence. And what Jason's going through and what we're all going through is what they would call loosely a redistribution of wealth.
Jason, feel free to hang out if you want to. If you've got anything, just go ahead and kick in. You're part of the conversation. And
I appreciate it.
Basically, we can take as many callers as want to throw in on this deal as we go along. The what is the call-in number again? I forget. It's on the webpage.
601 610-616.
You got the rest of it, dude?
57.
What a great... there you go.
Welcome to the
I called in on Skype, so I don't... I actually, during the break, I programmed it into my fast dial.
It's the call-in number is 610-616-5187 if you're coming in on a landline. Or at Skype, you can come in on watchman.live. Anyway, go ahead, Viz.
Oh, no. I was just saying, I don't know if you have any other callers there or you get the things in the chat room.
No, we'll just take them as they come on.
I'd like to get in these 10
points. Well, okay. Go ahead.
Okay, Gordon.
I've heard a lot of shows will talk about how, the 10 planks to the Commie Manifesto, they're already here, but they never delineate them. And it doesn't really take a lot of time. I mean, I printed something up offline that talks about it, and they actually give the American equivalents of how they've come to fruition, but I don't need to get into that unless we want to. I mean, I could just really quickly list off the 10, and you guys probably in your own heads it would probably only take a few seconds to realize for each one how they've come to fruition here. But let's just go through it. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. The first plank, abolition of property in land and the application of all rents of land to public purposes. Think of zoning and...
No, what we see here...
domain.
Right, but there's another thing happening here. And it's going to be disguised under environmentalism, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we know all about the rewilding stuff and all that's going on with the UN and their plans to rewild the Earth, which means all you people get the hell out of here. You got to wonder how they're going to do that, and that's another story. So under environmentalism, you're going to see people that are going to be confined to what you would call islands of habitat. Abolition of private property, yes, that's going to be taken over. Also, folks, if you want to take a look at what the plans are for the wonderful Brave New World, look at, go Google or search probably somewhere else, communities of character and see what they've got in store for us. They're going to keep us confined and let the furry and feathery animals go free while we live like sardines in a can. That's the plan. So abolition of, yes, there'll be no more transference of inheritances, which I think that's another plank down the road.
Oh, please don't. Oh, jeez. I'm dealing with this right now. By the time the beast gets done taking its portion out, there are no heirs.
No, they don't want that to happen. In effect, that guaranteed retirement account only allows, supposedly, half of what, when you die, heirs or wherever the designated recipients are can get half. That's it. Half of what you amass goes to them, and the rest goes to the state. Yeah. So here we go once again.
Well, that would actually be better than what we have now. You know, I'll take this for abolition of private property. You didn't really have to abolish it, because what they effectively did in this country is they guaranteed you never owned it in the first place, manipulating of land deeds and titles. And the most insidious of all, the never-ending, ever-spiraling property tax.
Yep.
That's right. Yep. You're right. Even if you have your property bought off, which a lot of people have had, have done, and felt they were okay, are now actually being bent and pushed out of their properties because they can't pay the property taxes. And I came from a state where the property tax is the highest, $7,200 per home. And if you think of some of the towns like Wallington and Harrison and Union City, you cannot believe their little postage stamp of a place, you're putting out $7,000 a year. So it's true. And you have no allodial title to your land. You don't.
No.
You're a tenant with a little better rights if you supposedly own it, but you're still a tenant.
We never did have allodial title because, you know, the king, King George, when he dictated the treaty, after the Revolutionary War, he dictated that he kept all mineral rights.
Well, if you want to be really, I mean, and this gets a little esoteric for people, but truly, think of this, and I think I said this: the Louisiana Purchase, we pay the French. Okay, we had these purchases, right? The Gadsden Purchase and all this. Did we ever pay the crown for the 13 estates? Do we ever pay them? Do we ever pay off the Virginia Trading Company? No. They're the ones that set out the plots.
Largely because, you know, and here again, it's useful if you have the opportunity to do this. Go to Jamestown. I did it a couple of years ago. There's a museum there. The original land deeds are in glass for all to see. It was established as a corporation for trade.
That's right. And we never paid them. But people will say, well, we won those lands in the spoils as the victor of the Revolutionary War. And as we said, we did not win the Revolutionary War. King George drafted the terms. If he's a loser, how the heck did he draft the terms? And he basically said, okay, call the colony states. That's fine. See you later.
Yeah, give them what they want. Use euphemistic language, duplicity.
Yeah, put the bank in.
Yeah.
Right, give them a central bank. We don't have to fight about this. We just want the money. It's always about the money.
Hey, and then they... Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick.
Jason.
This is Jason again. I apologize.
No. I'm just identifying voices for the listeners.
Yeah, I'm by no means any scholar of any sort as far as it pertains to land deeds or titles or anything like that, but I happened to drop out of high school, and subsequent to that, I actually obtained a real estate broker's license in Denver, Colorado, which is where I'm from, but never made anything of it because I couldn't quite comprehend it all, but nevertheless.
Well, I think better of you for that, actually.
Most interesting thing about that whole situation was they never actually went into detail. It was like a cram course of basically just how to go in to the Colorado State Broker Commission or whatever and obtain your license, but they didn't actually go into any significant detail as it pertained to the differentiations between land titles, land deeds, holdings, this,
well,
and
no,
the other.
No, they don't. This is the thing about it. It's like taking a dollar bill to the local bank and going up to the teller and asking them if they understand that the Federal Reserve is a private for-profit corporation. Or that their dollar bill is a debt instrument. They will look at you like you have three noses on your face.
Exactly. And I just think it's astonishing to me, anyways, that I actually was capable of obtaining a real estate broker's license without any of the pertinent facts as it pertained to the brokerage or dealing of land. I was like, a significant majority of what I understand about land brokeraging and everything else came after I obtained a license, but also after the license expired, because it was so above my head. I was just like,
"Well, I find that to be extremely interesting." You now know more than the guys that are selling real estate do, because they don't want to know that.
Yeah, and back to what you were saying about the whole. Going to the bank and ask them about debt instruments and everything. Every time I go to cash my paycheck from the meatpack plant I work at, they ask me, how would you like that? I say, I'd prefer it in gold or silver if possible.
Yes, PC coin, please.
They're like, they just kind of chuckle and just flip out the worthless paper. But
that ended in 1933.
Well, actually, gold's banned from the banks now. They don't even want it in safe deposit boxes in Pennsylvania. They've put rules out that those people who have safety deposit boxes should remove all precious metals from the boxes with no explanation at all.
Jason, by the way, I know you're being a little facetious. I mean, although I don't doubt that you did that, but, you know, you can still convert the dollars into gold and silver while you can. I mean,
no doubt about that. You just got to go to a private broker. I understand all that.
Yeah. Well, let me just tell you this, because I did this myself, so I'm not just blowing smoke. In 2002, after getting hurt three times with mutual funds being a good saver, because I realized it was a scam, that there is a time to get out of the market, but in mutual funds, they tell you to stay in, you know, for the long haul, and they bleed you every 5 or 10 years. What I did was I pulled all our 401ks out, I settled with the government, and I put the money into gold, collector coins, silver dollars, and silver bullion bricks. And that's where I sit right now. I never thought it would appreciate like it did. I was just trying to preserve. So what I'm saying is, it's not too late if you want to do that. If you're serious about that, really, you can do that.
Well, and I totally and completely comprehend, because back in 2004, I was advocating the acquisition of precious metals, even though I was only making $12.50 an hour at the time.
That doesn't matter. But, doesn't matter. Yeah.
Since then, I'd say about 2003-2004, I was convinced in my own mind that somehow or another the Social Security number was appertaining to the mark of the beast, and I went on a 3 or 4 year sojourn trying to find work without a Social Security number, and as of until the first of last year, I actually started back working with a Social Security number, and I have absolutely no form of savings. I've by God's grace, I've been sustained hand to mouth, but that's why I'm at where I am, and as of this point, I'm only making about $10.50 an hour, so it's like trying to save and put anything aside. I mean, I've at one point in time I had several silver and gold coins, but heading into my sojourn, apart from the Social Security number, I was just like, I ended up having to disperse all of my holdings at that point, which wasn't much at the time, but as of this point, I might have a handful of silver rounds, and the way the pay scale is, man, I could barely, you know, cover bills. Wow. And cover food, and you know, even think about trying to save up. I mean, at this point in time, I don't even have a vehicle.
Well,
myself.
This is the condition that all Americans will eventually be put into, because what will happen over time is that they will regulate the economy to the point where you will have credits issued to you, and those credits will obviously have an expiration date. Savings will become obsolete because the nanny state's going to take care of your long-term needs, don't you know?
Oh, well, most definitely. That's the whole entire purpose behind the whole socialized healthcare, because, I mean, who's going to argue with the fact that the slave master should take care of the health of their slaves?
There you go.
I mean, seriously,
yeah.
Who's going to argue with that?
Are you guys ready for the second plank?
Yeah, I'll read this one. Number two is a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Hmm.
Oh, well, that hasn't happened here. Holy crap.
Not in America.
We can
there you go.
On. Okay, third plank. Abolition of all rights of inheritance. Randy, that's what you're dealing with.
That's what we were saying. Yeah. Yep. You ain't going to be able to trickle it down.
And the two are tied together. Look, earlier this week, I went to the county office to file the estate papers that have to be filed here in this state. I took an oath. I put up my hand and I swore an oath that I would see that the state got all monies due to them. That was the oath.
Wow. You're going
to
help.
That's my sole role as the executor of my parents' estate, is to see the taxes are paid. No. Make no mistake, I'm doing this clean. I hired an attorney to deal the whole thing. He's got fiduciary responsibility. I'm not a fool.
Okay, let's go to the next plank.
Fourth plank. Confiscation of the property of all emigrants and rebels. Now, you guys, if in 1932 we were proclaimed enemies of the state by FDR, doesn't that mean we are all rebels?
Of course.
Everybody on this call is a rebel, including the immigrants that I work with. They're all rebels.
No, they're not, because they don't pay anything. They're the smartest ones in the world. They don't pay
Social
Security.
Yeah.
I would tend to actually I would beg to disagree with that, because rather interesting. They several of them claim zero on their taxes, and they actually have more taxes withheld than I myself do. I'm not going to go into any details about it, but they're actually paying a higher percentage of their wages to taxes than I am.
Well, so they'll learn. They'll learn.
The whole idea. I would agree. I'm trying to tell them as best I can in sign language because I don't speak Spanish. But
follow. Speak to the hand. Yeah, that's
yeah, exactly.
All right, let's go to the next plank.
Yeah.
Fifth plank: centralization of credit in the hands of the state with a capital S. Can you say Federal Reserve?
Well, how about the banks being taken over by the government?
Yep.
And I don't blame that on Obama. That's another thing. Look, we're going through a second Sovietization of this country. They can call it federalization, call it whatever you want. It's happening now. It's not Obama's fault. He's the dumbass that's being put in there to do what he's doing. Under FDR, we saw all that stuff happen, too. And that's another thing that Foster said. You're going to go through a massive Sovietization under FDR. It happened. It's happening now. Now, government taking over the banks? Fine. What's the problem? They failed. What's the solution? And this is a galleon to the core. Oh, we'll bail them out. And this year, it's going to get even more interesting along the lines of credit cards, banks, and us. I'm done.
Okay. Sixth plank, centralization of the means of communications, can you say Clear Channel, and transportation, can you say DMV and Amtrak being taken over, in the hands of the state. Communication and transportation.
The FCC has struck down what it used to observe in years gone by, monopoly of local media to include print and electronics has already happened. Let me ask you this. With the FCC and the FAA, who gave them control over the air? Who gave them control over that?
Could it be Satan?
There you go. So here we go. I mean, so the centralization has already happened. You guys were making fun early on, in back of what Gordon was saying about a guy that was a lone voice out in Los Angeles who recently passed. And we were talking about Clear Channel. Yeah, that's all taken. Look, let's face it, okay? Look at the prosperity and the increase in coast to coast. Just take a look at that alone. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it's on six damn hours here every night from 11 to 5, whether it's rebroadcast or whatever. And those guys do the government shtick. Norrie and Punnett, no matter what they say about anything, whether they're talking about flying rods or, you know, shadow mice or any of this crap.
Shadow mice.
Sorry.
Flying obelisks.
There you go. But when they get to 9/11, it's the government story, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all right. So there you go. And Glenn Beck, I mean, how can you ever escape these characters no matter where you are in any city? So, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, but that's plank five, right?
Well, if I can backpedal back to the whole bank bailout thing, this is Jason, by the way, for all the listeners. I'm sure everyone in this conversation believes in the validity and the scriptures as they were written. If you go to Zechariah chapter 2, verse 7, it says, deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, after the glory hath he sent unto the nations which spoiled you, for he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. For behold, I will shake my hand upon them they shall be a spoil to their servants, and you shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me. And I came across that about a year, year and a half ago, that particular scripture. And the thing that just like jumped out to me was that the daughter of Babylon shall be a spoil to their servants. And I'm thinking to myself, could that possibly be that the citizens of Babylon are going to be a spoil to their public servants? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe I'm just grasping at straws, maybe, but that seems to be a pathetic fulfillment, especially with the bank bailout and most definitely with the healthcare thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that actually goes to the root again of this misinterpretation of Romans 13 and even some of Peter's writings as well. You know, the government has become a terror to us and to righteous people and to all the things that were ordained. You know, we weren't supposed to be servants of Babylon, but yet at the same time, we had adjoined ourselves to a system which is religiously and civilly Babylon now. I mean, I can view the America as that. I can view the American church as that as well. And in a sense, what happened was, you know, we put our light under a bushel here, the few people who actually were really Christians, and as a result of that, the darkness came in. And I mean, yeah, all that's prophesied to happen. It doesn't mean we don't resist it, but we resist it in a manner that's consistent with, you know, the teachings of Christ. And I think, you know, when you look at them, and I don't want to beat on this, but there's two extremes out there. There's the ultra-passive person that's sitting there drooling on Prozac in front of their TV, and then there are the people who are out there arming up and getting ready to do battle. And most of it isn't, you know, what I would call real Christians. It's these patriot numbskulls that have been stirred up by Jones and his ilk, getting ready to do something that's, they're just going to be, you know, they'll be squeezed under the tank treads, frankly.
Well, I was just going to say, I was divested of Alex Jones back in 2004-05, so
good move.
I'm not a frequent listener of that particular person.
Excellent. We've all been deprogrammed. We're okay.
Yeah, same here.
Plank
okay,
number seven.
Seventh yes. plank. Extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state. Can you say Department of Agriculture, Tennessee Valley Authority, and the Hoover Dam?
Absolutely. One more. State control. Go ahead.
All right. Eighth plank. Equal liability of all to labor. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Think of that, like minimum wage laws and mandatory overtime and all that.
All right. Now, remember also in 32, because of obviously the Depression, that they had the WPA, they had the CCC and other things. There was something chilling, and I know we're kind of running out of time, so I'll get to this quickly. There is a book called, Terrorism. I think I sent it to you, Gordon. It was written by Trotsky. Terrorism and the State or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, in there, what's really chilling, and understand something. I don't know if anybody's aware of this, and but there was legislation on the Hill called the Universal Military. Universal Military. What are we looking at here? Act. Okay, whatever it was, and it called for compulsory government or military involvement for. Let's see. At the beginning, it was something like 12 months or something like that. Anyway, the point is it went back and forth, and it finally was called universal national. It took the word military out. I here it is. Universal Service Act. Okay, I'm missing a word there. My point was they took out military and they put in national. What it is compulsory
service
to either the military, and if you can't do that for whatever reason, to some kind of
civilian corps.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for helping me out with that, all right?
I mean, basically, that's what you're seeing. It's even in the healthcare legislation.
So the thing is that in that book that I was mentioning to Gordon about, by Trotsky, Terrorism and whatever, it talks about the thought of having universal military industrial armies. And I'm looking at the wording of that bill. Now, that bill is gone. If anybody tries to go to thomas.loc.gov, where you can see all legislation. I've gone there a number of times to check in on that. That bill was changed three times to the point now where it was. And get this, and Freak Lemon will admit to this as well, even though, you know, his reservist duty is over with. It is now compulsory service for, I think it now is 2 years, ages 18, get this, to 45, male and female. Now, that sounds crazy, but what happened was Freak Lemon was telling me that they were starting to call up reservists that were like 45 or older to do chopper duty. So what I'm saying is that what Trotsky was saying, and of course I don't think he made this stuff up, again, that's part of the plan, and of course we'll never get into dialectical materialism at this time, but the architects of all this stuff knew what was going on, and now they've put that in the hopper for us now. You can't find the legislation. I have it saved in my docs. Anybody wants to see it, I'll send it to them. Universal Military Service Act, that's where I'm going with. Okay.
Yeah. Send an email to visigoth@hotmail.com.
Yeah, visigoth@hotmail.com, and I'll send you the legislation. What I'm saying is, here it is afoot. They're going to get ready to do the same thing they did in 32, and that is basically put out industrial, quote, armies. Sorry.
Ninth plank, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries. This is the one that Stalin had to kill the kulaks with by the millions, starve them out. This is the one, can you say, agribusiness. This was the death of the American farmer, too.
ConAgra.
Yep.
Well, and effectively, the British did this much earlier. They did it a century ago with the Industrial Revolution. They basically pulled the people off the farms, brought them into the cities, and urbanized them. And as a result of that, their agricultural industry basically collapsed in almost nothingness, which is why they had to go pillage other landscapes. And that was the end of what it was effectively the distinction between country and city. You know, and
that's
they knew
right.
They were doing this. They were cutting, what they were doing was cutting off the ability for self-subsistence, the ability to take care of oneself by living off of the land.
Exactly.
That's right. Once again, come in and be dependent on the state.
Wow, that's interesting. What was,
I didn't do it.
Sounded like somebody had cartoons on in the background.
That was my cordless phone.
Okay.
I do apologize.
All right.
What a kidder. Okay, number 10.
Last one. Gee, I wonder if we have this in America. Free education for all children in public schools.
Everybody thinks that the public education system is wonderful, and it was part of the whole deal. In essence, what it is massive reindoctrination, which we're seeing now. In the old days, in Franklin's days, and days beyond that, communities took care of educating their own children. That's what they thought was part and parcel of having a town. Now, ever since that education system, and Foster, here's another thing where Foster laughs at us. He says one day, he called it, he goes, you'll have a National Department of Education. Well, now we know it under a different title, but it came in 1979, and that's what we've got now. And who in the world did they put the education system in the hands of but John Dewey, who's a collectivist and an atheist and a communist to the core? And Bella Dodd said that same thing as well.
And he went to, what was it, either Chicago U or Columbia U, both of them, you know, Rockefeller.
Yeah.
And
he went to both of them.
By the foundations.
Mm-hmm. And that's where Bloom came out with his taxonomy. And you know, Gordon, I found out later, and perhaps you did too, but Bloom's taxonomy is absolutely stupid.
Well, it's actually extremely intelligent. And my friend Dean Gocher talks about this. Dean's also a school teacher, former school teacher, and his mother was a school teacher. And Dean lectures nationally, and he talks extensively about Bloom's taxonomy and the change agents that were basically injected into the education system to accomplish exactly what is outlined in this 10th plank. My list on this has a couple other aspects to it. One was abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, which we never, you know, that's something that was a glimmer in America, basically. But combination of education with industrial production. I think what we see now is basically...
School to work.
school to work, and the conformity system that goes into place and making you look at how curricula has changed in 25 years. You know, the distinction's no longer made between academic course credits and those who maybe went through high school with a bent towards going into what was called in my day commercial students, or students who were vocational. Basically, it's all streamlined now towards, you know, minimalistic preparation for a workforce that doesn't exist anymore. And so this is why you have kids on Ritalin and a curricula course that's basically a smattering of this, but there's no integrated knowledge systems anymore. You know, science, mathematics, and things like that are no longer integrated into a schema where you would develop skills that would be called God-given. It's basically designed now to slipstream children into the vocational system that presently exists.
And one of the clever things they've done, no doubt using Bloom as justification, in high school English classes, and I'm talking all the grades and pretty much all of the courses in high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and you can throw in college too, because it's the same thing. In English courses, I'm talking never, like 99.8% of the time, they never teach grammar anymore. They all teach they only teach grammar, you know, the nuts and bolts of the language.
Yeah, nobody knows how to diagram a sentence anymore.
No, well, they don't want you to do that because they want the lawyers to be able to play tricks on you.
Well, of course, absolutely. If you can parse language, you're dangerous.
Yeah, but they teach novels only because then you can implant your socialist values in the teaching of that novel.
Yeah. And, of course, Bloom's taxonomy is based purely on Hegelian dialectic and dialectical materialism. And since we didn't get to this, you know, and it would have been a big thing to bite off anyway in the course of a show like this, but one thing that jumped out at me about dialectical materialism is how it defines itself. And the quote that I have is from George Lukács, who was a minister of culture in the Hungarian Soviet Republic, and he says this, because he basically coined the phrase, "It is not men's consciousness that determines their existence, but on the contrary, their social existence that determines their consciousness."
Wow.
Yeah. Mind control is the operative in all of this.
Yeah.
You know, basically, the human being is infinitely malleable. This is Malthus, by the way. You know, this is all of the great 19th century so-called philosophers. But basically, what they're saying is that man is infinitely malleable and capable of being formed into anything that we want to make him as a result of shaping the culture around him. That's dialectical materialism in a nutshell. And it's what is being accomplished through the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto and all the other things that we've talked about tonight, because at the end of the day, that's really what it's been about. It's been about reforming a culture and moving it into becoming a society of slaves.
This is not the time, I know, to introduce this, because...
No, go ahead. You know, you've got as much time as you want to talk, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
my vote is the third hour, but...
There is no third hour. There's only a long second one.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go back to what we were talking about when we last met. And we said, and now we don't have to parse words, okay? Here's the deal. Satan rules the government. Satan rules the world, okay? Money is his idea. There would be no money if we stuck with Jehovah's Law. All right. We won't go through all that stuff. But as that transcends down, I mean, that's what we're dealing with. And those are the powers of the world, and that's what we work with. You know, I mean, I think back to when Chuck, and it kind of haunts me, I guess, because I just wish I could say something better. But the thing is, you know, this is an orchestrated situation. Nihilism, we talked about, is without hope. And even if you didn't believe in Jesus Christ, and just say that that's out of the question, we deal with a lot of people who don't believe in that. What do you tell them? I mean, while we were talking, I just had an exchange with Freak Levitt, you know, and you know where he's at. And it's like, look, what are you going to say? I mean, the deal is done. You can't fight it. You can't vote against it. Are you hopeless? Well, I guess it's probably your choice to be that way. And nihilistic behavior will really never get anything except suicide. When you really think about it, that's all it is suicide. You act in a very strange way, which is going to bring your own end around. But that's the way it is. I don't understand. And you know where I'm going with this stuff, with the Patriot networks and all this crap. You're not going to get your country back because you never had it. You're not getting your Constitution back because it never was yours. So now what are you going to do about it? Just hope for a miracle? And that's where we're at. I don't know what else to say. People want a satisfactory answer. They want a happy ending. Sometimes, guess what? It just doesn't happen. If you were born in Warsaw in 1930 and your name happened to be like Goldberg, what do you think you felt like when you saw the jackboots walking in 1935? Oh, I guess your life is going to probably suck. Look, it even says, and I don't mean to go on and on, all right, but I always was struck by this. I think it's in Proverbs, not Ecclesiastes. It says, time and chance befall all. What does chance mean? The luck of the draw, man. It happens.
Yeah.
It's in Scripture, and that's just the way it is. We're right now in a place where we're in that kind of Warsaw ghetto 1935 situation. You could yell against it. You could rail against it. You could say it's not there, but it's coming. Now, what are you going to do about it? For us who have the hope in Jesus Christ, we understand that, but I don't want to throw other people off the bus because they don't.
And yet, knowing what I know, and it's pretty much, what you guys know, but knowing it, if I didn't know about the reality and the truth of Jesus Christ, I would have been a suicide years ago. And my question to guys like Alan Watt, and I'm sorry, but Freak Lemon, is what are you waiting for? You don't want Christ. Kill yourself. You got no hope outside of that.
I got another caller here on the line.
All right,
hello.
How do you do?
Good evening. Who are you?
My name's Pete. I'm in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, Canada.
Very cool. Hello. Welcome to Watchmen Live, Pete.
How you doing? Let me turn this stuff down here. Wow, I'm a bit nervous.
We are too.
To Mr. Hansen, you once called me an asshole, so hopefully by the end of this we might have a better understanding of one another. I think there's a solution here. I think the solution is what you guys are doing right now. I think if you listen to Paul Sandu and things like that, our goal as good Christians is to have to please God, to be a pleasure to God. Mm-hmm. I think this conversation is pleasurable to God. I think this conversation is some good spirits coming together and chatting about observations, not getting entwined in anything, but just observing what's going on and talking about it in an open way. I think as long as we're doing that and pleasing God, the other guy's not too pleased. And if the other guy's not too pleased, we know he's probably trying to do something about it. If he's trying to do something about it, maybe one less bomb falls. Maybe one less sacrifice takes place.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Maybe this is the answer.
There's obviously a reason why we're compelled beyond common sense to continue to do what we do. I mean, I think all three of us, as those who have been out there in the alternative media, are compelled to do this. And I mean, I don't know that we reach but one soul, but that one soul would be worth all the labor that we put into it.
There it is, right there. There it is. One soul. It is worth it, right?
Yeah.
One soul's worth it.
Because the other thing is, we're talking about economics. We haven't really talked a whole lot about Yahweh's economics. Yahweh's economics is the inversion of the devil's, because he expended everything that he had for that one soul. And that one soul might be you, or it might be somebody that hears this podcast somewhere down the line.
Exactly.
And there's hope in that. For those who do not believe right now, trust me, there comes a time when a word is spoken, and that word takes seed and germinates, and it could be a word that we drop tonight that lands a couple of years out. I don't know. That's why
We don't have to be quoting Scripture and all that sort of stuff to have the right spirit, to have the right attitude. I've I sort of came into found the truth in 2000, and it was a remarkable experience to me. I'd never stepped foot in a church in my life. Never. Never had anything to do with it. And all of a sudden, I decided to had some time on my hands and started researching things. And believe it or not, my first intent was to... do you remember the series on HBO called Oz? The jail, the high security.
Yes, I do remember that. As a matter of fact.
Well, I'm a 48-year-old hippie, and back, you know, these jailbirds, you know, the rough lifestyle. That, I don't know, that show. I liked it for some reason, and the only good guy in the whole program was a Muslim. So I thought, hey, this is what I want. I got to do this Muslim thing. So I started looking up about what's going on. I had my hat ordered, man. I thought I'd be walking around with one of those cool hats, right? And through research. You find the truth. You don't, you know, all these religions are just that, cults. And you know, you ask a question, is this God thing real? And I'm telling you, these conversations can make one or two people say, is this God thing real? We all know what's going to happen if somebody asks that question.
Hey, while we're on the subject of talking about Yahweh's economics, I want to throw in something for Yahweh's idea of land ownership and eminent domain and all of that. I like what Naboth was able to tell Jezebel and Ahab when they wanted his vineyard. He said, no, you go to hell.
Yeah, and they killed him for it.
Yep.
Yeah, Jezebel basically said, hang tight here, dude. I'll go get your land for you. And she sent her henchmen out. But that's basically what we're talking about, standing in our boots. You know, maybe it comes down to that. Maybe it really does. But is that one brief second when you're staring down the barrel of a gun terrifying to somebody that believes in an eternal life? I would say at that moment you won.
Exactly.
Yeah. May I speak?
Absolutely.
The gentleman in Nova Scotia, your name is Paul? Is it
Peter?
Peter, I'm sorry. Well, okay. All right, Peter. No,
and guess what? I used to get real angry at people, and you could say I probably would lift a sword and cut somebody's ear off. I had a real problem with Jews, and now I realize that all of that was in vain. I feel I have this real strange spiritual understanding of the life of the Apostle Peter, and it's bizarre that my name is the same to me.
Well,
and
no,
I was
no,
apparently
I mean,
named that way. My original name was supposed to be Gary. And my mother was late in labor, and she prayed and called me Peter.
Peter. Well, one thing I want to say to you, and I think you don't need to know that the three of us, and that would be myself, Gordon, and Randy, are kind of going through something like this. This kind of like, in its own self, a dialectical process. But we deal with people who aren't Christians, and I mean, the one thing I want to make clear is that this is not a superiority thing.
No.
You know, it's not like we're better than you. No, it's not that at all. But the thing is to try to share with people that there is a hope beyond this life. That's not really being taken too well. It probably won't be. And Peter, as you know, and the rest of the guys know, you know, it most of the time it's not going to work. But the thing is, what I try to, I guess, prevent is the thought that Christians are fatalistic. And willing to want to bring the whole thing down. It's not the case at all.
No.
And we often say, you know, we're not talking about the end of the world. We know after the trip, there's another millennium.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and I still go back to, I'm sorry, but what Chuck was, you know, what wrote in the chat room, and that is, what do you consider hope, and what do you want to come out of all this with? If you're looking for an earthly situation that's going to be victorious, you know, take a look at our politics, take a look at all that's happened, and ask yourself seriously. And look back at civilization. Nobody's ever hit a human government situation that has been lasting, and there's a reason for that. Now, beside that, we do have to, you know, speak for the hope that we have. And that's just the way it's going to be. But I think Randy, Gordon, and I, we'll agree, without getting into too much depth, that we're at a point where it's getting a little tough to talk about what's going on today and futurism, because we're just not going down the same path. And it's really hard to reconcile right now. And I'm gonna throw that to you, Peter, if you'll brook that. Randy and Gordon, I mean, we're out of time right now, you know, and of course, you know, I'm a lightning rod, and you know, I'm bad, I admit. But
what do you mean by that? Why do you say that?
That I'm a lightning rod?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I don't hold my tongue like I should, and you know it.
Oh, but man, we're real. Like, you know, did you hear what I say? I'm only into this thing 10 years. I talk like you do, but I guarantee you, our spirits coming from the same place, brother. I mean,
well,
it doesn't matter. You don't have to. You don't have. You know, we're allowed to curse once in a while. We're allowed to get angry.
Not really.
Here's the thing. I don't want to do a religious show. You know, I do a Christian show. I do a show on prophecy and biblical teaching, and I think the purpose of doing this show was to frame things in a way that there was a little bit more latitude, knowing that people aren't really drawn to all this Christianese BS that's been trotted out. I just don't want to sound like that. I'm not that guy.
I hope you respect the fact that you're the possibly one of maybe three people doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
the people who are exploding Christianity on the internet and radios and stuff are not Christians.
No, I...
Like the numbers are so few, it's frightening. And you guys, you know, what I'm getting at here is, let's do this more often.
That's okay with me.
You know, bring in Paul, bring in Zeph.
Well,
people,
okay,
you know,
that opens up. Yeah, I'll just say right now, 2 weeks from tonight, that's Friday night, Anyway, 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to do another mix-up with Watchmen Live, and Paul Sandu and... F. Halford are going to be here. We're going to talk about the media monster, because both of those are...
You know, I've always said that when the obituary of freedom, as it were, is written, the cause of death is going to be media. Right? This is, the airwaves. This is what's killing everybody.
Well, that's why it was one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto as well.
Exactly.
I mean, they knew this very early before, I believe, they gave us the media. I mean, what is media... You know, well, Marshall McLuhan defined it pretty well. The media is the massage.
It's for lightning rods like Viz to get distracted and think there's something wrong with being angry now and then.
Hey,
well,
there has to be a lightning rod anyway, because otherwise I'd be a crispy critter.
Hey, Peter, I got
to
ask you something.
Listen to this, right? There's some serious stuff going on here, but there's laughter, too, because we know what the real deal is. We understand this at a different level. And it is not superiority. I agree 100%.
No, it's not superiority.
It's a comfort zone. It's just being in a place, and when people look at you and they say, who do you think you are? You just sort of say, well, you know, who am I? I'm me, and if you don't like it, walk.
Hey, look.
Peter, I got two questions.
Sure.
Is Halifax in Nova Scotia?
That's right. It's right across the bridge from me. I'm looking at Halifax. I'm in Dartmouth. I'm on the other side of the river.
Are the Citadel still playing there?
Oh, you asked the question I was going to ask.
The Huckabees? They used to be called the Nova Scotia Voyageurs.
Yeah, right. But, Peter, you a hockey fan?
Oh, I played a lot of hockey.
Well, you're going to heaven.
I used to see Nova Scotia play here.
I used to sit in front of the net.
Yeah.
I have a piece of my jaw floating around in my cheek right now to prove it.
You're a real Canadian, dude.
You bet. Got all my teeth, though.
Well, that could disqualify you.
You didn't try hard enough, bro.
I used to, you know, the hockey. You want to talk about hockey? I used to get the biggest guy in the neighborhood, and I'd go stand in front of him and get him to shoot practice pucks at me, those red pucks. I don't know if you remember them. They were twice as heavy as normal pucks. And I get this guy to slap throat, and that's how I got a piece of my jaw in my cheek. I used to love standing in front of them.
So
them
your position was officially that you were the net.
Right.
Okay. I get it.
That's
an attitude that I think only Canada has.
What?
You gotta do a sports show sometime. That would be
fun. And sound with musicians in the neighborhood and stuff like that. I have so much, you know, I listen to you guys and I say, you guys, didn't I go to school with you guys?
Yeah, that was my evil twin.
I just love the fellowship, right? There's, you know, when Randy, you say, you know, the thrusting floor stuff and the stuff you do with Sue, I don't see that as churchianity at all.
That's anti-churchianity. That's completely
prophesying.
Well,
you know what I mean? You know, I hear these people who, you know, recite Bible quotes and try to tell you what it means and all that. There's a difference there. You can, the spirit is different. Like I said, when I woke up to this thing, first, I hadn't read the Bible in my life. I had a King George in my closet that my sister gave me 20 years ago, and it stayed in that box. I pulled it out in the year 2000 and started looking at it. I for some unknown reason, every time I'd hear somebody misquote the Bible, I knew it. It just, all of it would trigger. Boop, that's wrong.
Yeah,
and I'd look it up, and I'd say, sure enough, it's wrong. Then I listen to you. I've listened to you since day one,
wow,
since you came on the air. And I always say, you know, this guy makes sense. Everything. I never got that sense that you were misquoting the Bible. And it wasn't just misquoting. It was what I was sensing, in, you know, after time, I've realized is liars. Right?
Yeah,
I can
pick
a liar out a mile away.
Out there. You know, I think you meant King James, too, but the image of King George in the closet, I had to turn my mic down because I
yeah, that's
that was pretty funny. That was pretty good. That's Freudian.
What did I say?
Go ahead, Peter.
Did I say something wrong there? Did I misquote?
No. Said King George.
You said King George.
Oh, I meant King James.
King James, yeah. But
and for all we know, King George wrote the Bible, too. Who knows? I mean,
why not? He wrote the treaties after the Revolutionary War.
I knew that was going to come up. You know, what I was going to say, Peter, was I think if we can look at Jesus as a human being, we were allowed to laugh and at the same time be humble. There is no superiority coming from our position as believers. In fact, if anything, I feel more broken as a result of that because I feel, unto whom much is forgiven, much is given. And I really feel a commitment to that spirit. And at the same time, it's kind of like, no, we can kick back. We can relax. We can be a little irreverent. We can do political commentary and talk about hockey and Canadians with one tooth because that stuff is all cool. I mean, this is human nature. Let's get real.
No, don't mind. He couldn't sit right along and have a chat with us right now, you know?
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah,
I mean,
the Lord's in all of that. This is all a being of good cheer, even in dark times. Because if you can't laugh, you're really not a human being.
And can I ask Peter another question?
Absolutely.
Peter, you said you came hip in, 2000?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
You said you got hip to stuff in, 2000. You understood,
right.
Okay. Interestingly, that was the same thing that happened to me, although it took more footing in 2001. And, like I tell the guys, I mean, look, you know, I got a lot of hard bark on me, and I that's a problem. But let me say this. For whatever reason, I started doing research during the year 2001, okay?
Yeah.
And it was because of a graduate independent project that I was doing. Anyway, when I started reading the books that I was reading, which were all like science fiction books that were projecting in 1950s what this century would be like, I started getting this overall feeling of like, why do these guys predict doom and gloom, and what do they know, and are they really guessing? And to me, it was like, no, they're not. So what I'm saying is this. When I started integrating that information, and when I started to, just dabble into Patriot Radio, which served its purpose for a while, and then I looked and I looked at Scripture and I said, my goodness, this New World Order is the prophesied satanic takeover, and I realized it all works. And that's how I dovetailed everything together, and I realized, look, get yourself straight because the time is at hand. So I just want to say, you know, when you came to at 2000, so did I at the same time, from a different perspective, but it brought me back to my roots, and that is, okay, look, you know, the Bible's real, the Scripture's true, and, get to whatever you have to do because the time is short.
You know what I did as a hardened hippie, like I said, I started thinking, what would I do? What I did is I realized the amount of wealth some people have, and I started thinking, what would I do if I had that wealth? And it scared the crap out of me, frankly. You know what I mean? I started researching what these rich people do. And then I saw the abuse of children. You guys, this is bizarre, but I'm 48 years old, single, never married, no kids. I had a good life, had lots of, this is nothing unusual about that other than I never got married and had a family for some reason. And I started thinking about, being single at this age. And, it's odd to be this age and single. No doubt about it. So, I think that listening to trying to find the truth and answers and all this sort of stuff led me in a direction where at that point of life, I probably would have done some bizarre things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You're getting desperate at that point in life. You're thinking, what's it all about? And then somebody said, simple, you know what, did it? Ask for the proof of this God that they talk about, and you'll get it. And I thought that was the lamest sentence and line I'd ever heard in my life. But my brother, you ought to, if you had an hour, I'd tell you what happened to me after I asked that question. And it's not unlike your story about sitting on the side of the road and a car came along. You know, I know you guys. I know you guys like my brothers. You know, you've never heard my voice. I've only emailed you once, and you called me an asshole, so I stopped. But
he does that to everybody.
That's our
welcome to the
God.
Club.
I did. Well, you remember back in the day when you were selling that CD, I emailed you once and I said I think it's odd that you're selling something without the option of giving it away later, and you went right off on me.
Oh shoot! Well, then you know me. That's me. Yep, that's me.
But I didn't think anything of it. I didn't stop listening to you or think you were a bad guy or anything. I know what, you know, I know you're just, well, the odd part about listening to this group of people is we're so, have so much in common, it's frightening. And you know, I just love it.
That's that hard bark he was talking about.
Hey, Peter, let me ask you
that. I said, I know you probably have a lot of people criticizing you, and I don't want to go there. And your response to me was, what do you mean? I don't have people criticizing me. And I'm thinking, oh, I bet he does.
Well, I'll tell you what. In those days, they didn't, but soon after that, the gates were open. But, Peter, what I want to ask you is, do you want the CD?
They're free now.
You can have the CD, Peter. Just email me at visitgoth@hotmail.com. Whatever you want, you got it, you brother. Know, I have no problem with that.
You sent me a password to the thing anyway. Yeah, I did? Yeah.
Chris,
there's the difference, you see. If this was about the money, you wouldn't have done that. And all it was you were just experimenting with something or whatever you were doing at the time.
I don't know what I was doing.
And all I was doing was from my perspective, was saying, this seems odd. And back then, you know, probably three years ago, probably at this point, too, maybe. And I was still, I'm still, there's a lot of people out there, and you got to weed them out, man. And it's hard to tell who of these people aren't in it for the bucks. You know, Zeph Daniels is somebody who really, you know, I look at him as the ambulance driver that drove me to the hospital. From a worldly perspective. You know what I mean? I used to listen to this crazy man bang his bongos in his garage, and I'm thinking, what's this all about? But for some reason, I could relate to it, and I stuck with it. And he was the one that said, ask that question. And I just love that, man. He's a brother, too.
Hey, Peter,
but I watch him, and I see him sway back and forth, and I see him get wound up with his ego, and the music thing goes through the roof sometimes and all that stuff, and I think, you know, we're all dealing with this stuff. You know, we all deal with this stuff.
Oh.
But it's the spirit that comes through loud and clear, yeah.
Work out your...
Peter, do a show with me. Be my co-host.
Anytime. I was even, you know, when I listened to you and Angie the other day, I thought maybe, I read headlines. I know headlines. I could do that with them in a heartbeat.
There you go. Now you've got another voice for the week that wasn't.
Get him on.
You know what? Everybody said they wanted to be a co-host for the week that wasn't.
I said I'd do it.
Nobody's stepping up to the plate?
It starts to be like, Yeah, and Randy, I told you I'd hold back on you. But Peter, I tell you what, send me an email to visitgoth@hotmail.com. Give me a number. You're going to do a show with me.
There you go. All right. I love when this happens.
Oh, Christmas. Can you imagine? This guy forgave me. That's beautiful.
Well, you forgave each other. You know, and really, truthfully, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, and do it in public, too.
Right on. Forgiveness is another one of those tricky traps, man. I mean, like I say, you do a lot of crazy things in your life, and part of the deal, as far as I was concerned, was really forgiving, understanding what forgiveness was all about. And I could, of all the, bad things that I've done in my past, it was like in 2 seconds I could be forgiven for it because I was sincere. But there was one event in my life that I asked for forgiveness in every prayer, and that was I made a racially insensitive comment to a coworker one time, and I just, every time I think about it, I feel sick. It's odd, but that's something
It's
funny how those little things stick into you, and they just won't let you go. You're saying, what was I thinking when I said that?
Well, this is Jason over here. I don't know if you guys realize
Jason
that I'm still on the line. But that's definitely one of the things that I'm actually trying to come to grips with is not so much accepting forgiveness, but giving forgiveness as far as it pertains to people in my life that I definitely, most definitely need to forgive in my life, but man, that's definitely a struggle as far as it pertains to, I mean...
When you struggle with forgiveness, as far as I'm concerned, I think there's something bigger behind it, more than just forgiveness. I think it's more of an anger thing or something like that. You've got to reconcile in yourself why it is you can't forgive or having trouble forgiving people. My parents were accosted and held captive, were kidnapped basically by a fake cable guy, and you know, he beat the snot out of both my parents. And you know, I wouldn't hesitate to go sit in the room with. At first, this was 1999, or just before all this crap happened, and I'd go to court, and the cops would say you can't be here because they thought I was going to jump over the thing and grab the guy, right? And at this point, it wouldn't bother me in the bit to sit down across the table from this guy. Wouldn't bother me at all, and I'd tell him where I am, what I believe. If he didn't like it, fine. Otherwise, you know, you got to let go of animosities and you know, anger. Anger is the root of this stuff, man.
Well,
if you're having trouble with forgiveness, I guarantee it's attached to anger in some way.
Well, the reason you forgive people is because it's what's best for you. You can't walk around with that anger.
Agree, and just to shed some light on the topic of my lack of forgiveness or maybe anger as far as that pertains to, but my biological father split when I was like maybe 2 or 3 years old, and I most definitely think that's definitely been a stumbling block in my life as far as it pertains to drawing closer to Christ and even God our Father, you know.
Do you watch a lot of TV?
Not so much now as I did back then, but I mean...
That's a killer, man. That's a killer. That's a knife in your soul right there. Every time you turn that box on, it's going to cause you anger.
Yeah. Well, there's a spirit of anger. There's a spirit of lust that's attached to it. A spirit of covetousness, the desire to have things, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Yeah, it's the package, man.
Yep.
And that's astonishing that you guys actually bring that up, because I've actually, the past several weeks, been identifying those particular issues, and it's like a total package.
Share what it is you're having trouble forgiving.
And I definitely think it stems from my lack of forgiveness for my dad taking off
there
on me.
There it is, right?
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to take this.
No. I think actually you identified something there. And we've gone here, this is probably one of the most difficult things to deal with, especially with the father figure, because there's an identificational thing that happens between you and the Father God, Yahweh, you know, where substitutionally your earthly father has disappointed you, and you do kind of project that onto the Creator as well, picturing him as the Father God.
And that's a part of anger, too.
The secret to this is going to be that you'll bring Christ into this, because he's the mediator. So, he's your older brother, this is all scripture, and what he's going to do is he's going to begin to create that bridge of forgiveness that you yourself can't negotiate. The anger and the rejection are all just part of the world system itself, and that world's passing away. Your ability to forgive and to identify with that healing aspect of Christ is what's going to enable you to reconcile it. Even though you may never physically forgive somebody, the act of forgiveness is in your heart, and it's a release of pain and rejection that comes as a result, especially in a father relationship. That's a tough one, because it's big, it's huge.
But Jesus, half our age. How old are you, Jason?
I've been on 30. The third rock from the sun for 31 years.
How old are you, though? How old are you?
I've been on the third rock from the sun for 31 years.
Oh, third rock from the sun. 31, see, 30.
That's
I knew
us,
it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's an age thing too. You know, you're still young. You got to, you know, dealing with parental issues, man.
And the reason, I mean, like I said, I didn't.
It's biblical that your parents are going to give you grief, right?
I didn't want to steer this this whole topic of the podcast in that direction, but I think it's definitely most definitely an issue that not only I, but most definitely several people actually have to deal with.
Yeah, and somebody out there may be dealing with it too, and that may be why it's coming out right now. You know, so we'll just try and minister a little bit of healing here as we go through the show. I mean, that's all part of this package.
I've had issues with my father, just like what you're talking about. I mean, I don't know the details of it. We don't need to. The problem is that, you know, I wonder how many of us had problems with our fathers. We're all bunches, you know.
I can tell you that I did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole and like Randy was saying, the whole idea of dealing with the rejection of a parental figure, namely the father figure, is definitely something that's cropped up in my life.
See, I think even what your language is evidence of, you know, the mind control television. I hear just the way you characterize things, rejection and things like that. I wonder if you're not just projecting a lot of this stuff yourself.
Hey,
you
better
think about it, man.
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm projecting it. I would most likely characterize it as perpetuating it, maybe.
Well, that's just as bad.
I haven't let go of it, and
let's deal with it this way, Jason. There's a point where it's not about the father or the rejection or anything. Scripture talks about a bitter root. And I'm not saying this judgmentally or anything, because this is a healing that you need to get. And so, you know, Father, I just pray right now you would release him from that, because that's bondage, and you who have set your son to set us free are free indeed. So, you know, just grab a hold of that right now. You're not going to look, this is not about instant healing. There's nothing instant about it. It's all process. And
I think it's kind of interesting you mentioned the bitter root, because I think it was yesterday or the day before last, I was thinking, I was actually meditating on my situation, and I was like, I don't have a bitter root. I have a bitter redwood, or a forest of redwood trees of bitterness in me, and I'm not even exactly sure as to what the source or origin was, but
I do.
I think it most definitely is more likely than not attributed to that.
Well, we're going to believe for the Lord to I think he's dealing with you about it, and that's why it came up, and I think somebody else needs to hear this as well. That happens a lot.
Amen.
And you know, we can just seal this right now, because it's something that occurs as a healing process in the blood of Christ. And we're all working through things in time. I mean, you know, we're at different ages and different stages in our lives, but nevertheless, we're still growing and moving in this whole thing. None of us have gotten to it yet. So, and that helps keep us humble as well, because, you know, sharing something like that's kind of deep, but okay, I think we all walk away from that with a little bit of insight into, you know, our own issues. Well, there's a psychological term as well. Wow. Yeah. The culture bleeds into everything, doesn't it? You know, somebody in the chat room said, 3 hours, please. Well, here we go.
Let's do it. I'm up.
Clear Channel will be calling.
I heard Biz the other night saying 12 o'clock was real late for him, so I'm wondering if we're not stepping on his time.
Well, no, I'll tell you what I do, because I'm an old fart. I sleep. I take a nap, and now I'm like all wired. But what I have to say is, Gordon still with us?
Yep.
Okay, you son of a gun.
It kind of tends to lurk in the background when somebody else picks up
a
wood
pile. Well, here's the deal, Peter. We can laugh about this. But Gordon says, look, I like to do like an hour on the book Catch-22, which is beautiful. And he goes, and then I sent him a book, Once Upon a Time, which was a tome. And I got before I really understood the way things were, but now it has another significance, and that is called the Albion Seed. So I said to Gordon, okay, look, I'll tell you what. You're on vacation. You know, we have a 3-hour differential. I'll make life easy for you. How about if we record at 9 o'clock your time, which is midnight in Visigoth's time? And Visigoth doesn't like to be up at midnight. But anyway, he goes, okay. So now, in back of all this is that my computer's hard drive crashes. That's another side story. Anyway, we do our interview on Catch-22, and then he tells me after the hour, I can't do the second hour. So here I am like, okay, I'm awake. Everybody else in the world is asleep, so what am I going to do? But I will tell you this. God's providence reached his hand down because as I was talking to you, I looked at this stinking computer, and I pushed the button one more time to see if it would boot, and it did. So I spent the second hour, which I should have been in an interview with you, you bum, and I offloaded all my files onto a flash drive. Otherwise, I would hate you for the rest of my life.
And then you'd have a better route to deal with.
quite a few. But anyway, yes, Peter, you're right. Visigoth likes to sleep after 9 o'clock at night.
It's quarter to 2 here.
That's because you're in that, like, Russian time zone.
Yeah, what is the time zone? That is a maritime zone.
But,
hey,
Peter, let me ask you. Do you know Terry Melanson?
I've heard you talk. I've heard your interviews with him. I know.
Well, I got to tell you, there's nothing more funny
personally
than two brainiacs like Terry and me trying to figure out what time I have to call him. And you know, well, Terry, is that your time or my time? I mean, it's like I'm not used to any time zones to the east. I'm used to calling people in the central, Rocky.
Exactly.
And to go the other way, it's like, Terry, okay, what is that? And you think we need a slide rule to figure this out?
He's in my neighborhood here somewhere, I think, isn't he?
So basically what you're saying, Viz, is the CIA was justified in using the excuse of why they screwed up the Bay of Pigs.
Oh.
About the time zone problem.
Listen, I mean, you're not kidding around. That is true.
Well,
and that's another whole story.
Russia just got rid of a few of them. I wonder if we're going to.
Well, no, the deal was, and what Gordon's making reference to, is that anybody will tell you who's been in the military, Freak Lemon will say this too, because he flies commercially now, but he was in the Navy. And the thing is, whenever you're going to do any ops, you never rely on time zones. You don't do it. You do it on Zulu time, which is also Grand Meridian time, okay?
GMT.
Now, there was a book written called The Invisible Government. Do I have that right, Gordon?
Yeah, I think that was what it was. Yeah.
Right.
I think
but listen to this. This is what they gave to the public, because this is what the government gave the writers. There were two writers. Ross is one of the names. I can't remember the other. They said that the reason the Bay of Pigs failed and that the air cover came in an hour too late was because they didn't know which time zones they were talking about, since the planes that were supposed to give cover came from Nicaragua in central time, and of course they were going to hit Cuba, which is in eastern time. And
it's better than no excuse, isn't it?
Well, I gave that to I gave that both to Freak Lemon and Pilot Pete, and they looked at me and they're going, "You got to be kidding me." I'm going, "Bro, this is not what I'm telling you. This was in a book written in 1964 saying the reason the Bay of Pigs failed was a screw-up in time zones." And they both said, bullspit, it's all about Grand Meridian time. That could never have been the reason.
But as long as 1% of the public is only privy to the truth, the other 99 are going to buy it.
Well, but you see, here's one of these cases where this is what they gave the public. And back in 1963, I mean, honestly, there were plenty of people, or 62, I mean, there were plenty of people who must have looked at each other and going, that's baloney. But life goes on.
It's the same as the failure of the Twin Towers and Building 7 and all that.
Yeah. But anyway, the thing is, that was what was given for general consumption. And I had Edward Schwartz on, and we were talking about this because he wrote a book about Kennedy. Unfortunately for Mr. Schwartz, and, he's got cancer and he's battling it. He won't be back on again. That's too bad. But he writes me all the time. And we talk about this whole thing, about what in the world was the Bay of Pigs about, who scuttled it, and what did it really mean. you know, and so when I look at that book, The Invisible Government, which he finally read, he goes, you know what, there's something really screwy here. And it's like, yeah, there was. And so if Kennedy had to do that to pay back the mobsters to get back the gaming industry in Cuba, he might have been paying off, you know, the gangsters that got him the election thrown to him. And then this is another whole thing, but I'm sorry to say, you don't mess with Cuba because that's a Roman Catholic place. No matter how much they say it's communist, it's Roman Catholic. You don't screw with Cuba.
Yeah.
And, of course, to this day, we don't screw with Cuba. We want to mess with North Korea. We want to mess with Iran. We want to mess with all these countries. Excuse me.
Well, you know, the one thing with Cuba is the whole cigar thing really ticks me off because I want to smoke one Cuban cigar before I leave this mortal
Cuban
coil.
Cuban cigars. We're allowed to have Cuban cigars up here.
Cool.
Well, Randy, you got to come down to Ybor City. That's where they roll those, baby.
Yeah. They what is it, like the Seinfeld thing where they get the guys that roll the sushi to do the cigars? Is that?
Well, here's another thing real quick. The former mayor of Tampa, whose name is Greco, is really Latino. You know, his name is like, you know, Italian Greek, okay? So he comes up to St. Leo's, and Harry and I have to video this, okay? You got to remember this flustercock, okay? It's... So we're doing this, and Greco's doing his yada yada, and then it comes to a point where apparently he might have left a script. And what he's telling us, and this was back in 2004, he was saying that the Cuban embargo, he kind of laughed behind his hand. He's like, look, we've been doing business with Cuba. Farmers have been doing business with Cuba, despite the blockade. And what he was there to do was to promote trade with Cuba, which I think is a really good idea. I mean, whatever. But the thing is, despite what we all believe, Greco let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, by saying, we do business. Don't worry about it. So anyway, there's your Cuban blockade. I'm done.
Now you're messing with Canada.
Take off, eh? Take off.
The headlines in all our papers, the headlines in all our papers is how Hillary Clinton's coming up here telling us we're terrible people because we don't want to go to war in Afghanistan.
Well, you are. She's right. Oh,
I'm trying to. My girlfriend and I are creating a business. We're about to trying to buy a farm, and she's a dog trainer, and we're going to train dogs to. We've done a lot of research, and there's a lot of evidence that interaction with dogs is really good for returning vets.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got probably 2 feet of documents we've been sending off, interacting with the Canadian government, senators, and all this kind of stuff, trying to get this thing going. We've got commitments from all of the military that they're going to use us once we can get the money together to get the down payment for the farm. But, yeah, we're going to train dogs and use them for PTSD therapy for returning soldiers.
Hey, that's Peter,
my retirement, a farm out in the valley with a greenhouse and dogs.
Peter, do you find a certain breed of dogs or mutts more trainable for that kind of situation?
Definitely. I'm not the dog expert. The girlfriend is huge in it, but there's no doubt about it. Devon breeds are far, believe it or not, some of the best breeds are like standard poodles, Labradors, obviously. And so, you'd be surprised. There's a new Terra poodle or something they call them, or poodle. I don't know. It's a cross between a Terra and a poodle. These things are supposed to be fantastic for companionship.
Hey, Peter?
Yes?
Changing the subject a little bit here, but sticking with Canada. Up in Canada, just out of curiosity, when you went to school, what did they teach you about the War of 1812?
Oh,
no.
Why do you say that? Oddly enough, they taught us about the War of 1812. I can remember we had this real dunce of a history teacher one time, and one of our exam tests was, when was the War of 1812?
It was a bonus point question, no doubt.
It was, but I'm telling you, that was on a test one. I'll never forget it. We actually were educated in the War of 1812. My recollection of it's pretty limited. I don't know if they talked about sending people down to burn down White Houses and things like that, but we were definitely, I was in school in the 60s, well, 70s, I guess, so the education system hadn't been totally destroyed at that point, so there was some education to be gained there. We did learn some history. We were taught a little bit about natives. You know, Viz has had that Trudeau guy, I can't think of his first name, but, you know, the we were well educated. I have a lot of sympathy for Native issues. And, you know, I lived in British
Columbia. Oh, no, okay. Peter, you're talking about Kevin Annette.
Right.
But what Gordon's referring to, too, and Gordon, I don't know if you saw this as well, Charles Wilcox is an author who lives in Calgary.
Yeah.
And he sent me History Channel tapes, but it was a Canadian take, not the History Channel like U.S., about the War of 1812, and it was really eye-opening in a sense that, well, something else was going on with D.C. whenever that was going on, but what they were saying was that William Henry Harrison wanted, you know, to bring an invasion into Lower Ontario, basically to take out that section that separates Detroit from Buffalo, and they were going to come in and take it, and they were repelled. Now, that's a really different take than we hear down here. So there were two things going on. It would seem that there was, at some point, a war of expansion by the Midwest into Canada. On the other hand, Canadians came in and kicked the shit out of D.C. So
it's strange to say, you know, the way that we're given history here is bizarre to me. And I've always said, you know, there's no doubt that we're not being manipulated any less than you are. But I think that they'd have to be a lot more clever in the way they manipulate us up here. There's less of us. And by numbers, more of us have a, you know, there was just a lot of surveys and things done lately about how many people believe the government is actually in control of what's going on here. And, you know, the numbers were like 80% believe there was external, you know, sources of control in this country. 80%? I mean, that's a frightening number.
That was the poll in Canada? 80% of people think that something else is going on?
Yes.
Holy mackerel. Hey, listen, let me go to Gordon, though. Gordon, I mean, we were kidding around about 1812, but did you want to say something about that?
Well, yeah, I saw that video that Chuck Wilcox
sent us. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it really emphasized, like you said, see, in our schools, we're taught that it was a purely defensive war the Americans were fighting because poor American sailors were being impressed into the British Navy against their will. But what we found out from Chuck Wilcox was that it was the Americans saw that war as a chance to, like you said, take out that section from Buffalo to Detroit, to take a big chunk out of Canada. It was an expansionist war. And it wasn't just one time, but several times we got our butts kicked by the Canadians. We're not taught that.
Can you imagine?
I think the reason they allow us to know that kind of stuff is because we don't act on that. You know, those sort of things were the truth given to the Americans. They'd have a different attitude towards it than Canadians do for some strange reason. And we're able to look at the past, you know, history, especially, you know, those wars, and, you know, sort of say, oh, well, that was the past. And for some reason, we just dismiss it.
Also, Gordon, if you remember this, too, because of the informer's work, that war seems to be multi-purposed, and one of the things that the informer said was, when you go into war again with a belligerent with whom you had signed a peace treaty, which of course would have been 1787 between the Brits and us, it initiates the previous treaty. It doesn't exist anymore. You remember that, Gordon?
Yep. So that the Treaty of Paris after the Revolutionary War, that treaty that King George dictated, you can throw it out, you can throw it in the garbage as of the War of 1812. It doesn't count anymore.
Now what we should do then is take a look at the Treaty of Ghent, which I think ended the War of 1812.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at that.
Yes.
Well, then how do you explain Quebec then?
They're just different.
This was sort of the outcome, wasn't it?
Well, you know what? I mean, you know, Charles says this stuff, and I mean, the Quebecois keep wanting to secede, and they might. He goes, "Well, I think they'll do that." I'm going.
It's a dialectic. The whole Quebec issue is a dialectic. It exists for a reason of conflict, and only for conflict. There is no succession, or nobody's going to separate, or you know, none of this stuff. It's a conflict point that's kept alive just to keep people arguing.
Well, Peter, check this out, because Robert Burke, who lives in Toronto, was feeding us information that was really good. I mean, he gave us the websites when we went there, and it was really interesting because Canada seemed to be hedging its bets, knowing that it might be encompassed by the North American Union, which bring Canada, the United States, and Mexico together.
That was a hot point here, man. That was lively. That was debated openly here, this crap, that stuff. And you guys, you know, every time anybody bring it up in the States, it was always a conspiracy theory. Well, this was mainstream news here for a while. People were talking about this stuff. There were people walking around with T-shirts and stuff, you know, no union, no union, no union. And that's why I went to sleep. They're going to do it through the back door. They're doing it through the back door.
Well, here's the other thing I want to ask you. Is Robert Burke, on top of that, and thank you for mentioning that, because, yes, there are things in Canada that are a lot more well-known about what's going on with this continent than you ever hear about in the United States. But Burke was saying also, and I don't know if you can find this out yourself, because Robert's a good source. There's no two ways about it. But also, Canada was applying for entry into the EU at the same time.
That's
you know
true.
Anything about that?
That's true. That's absolutely
okay.
True.
All right, fine. Okay.
We're making trade agreements right now with Jordan for some reason. That's the big deal right now. Big trade deals with Jordan, the Middle East. I don't understand it.
One other thing I want to ask you, since we got around to the subject of Canada, the oil industry up there, why is it that America doesn't understand that our major supplier of petroleum is Canada
not
the Middle East?
Yep.
Because the fact, you see, when you people are surveyed, you notice when people talk about your wars, and often they'll say they're just wars of oil, the majority of your population think it's just fine to have wars for oil.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the reason that you guys think all of your oil comes from the Middle East.
Well,
so
they think it's fine to wage warfare against people because they're Muslim, too, instead of looking at the less obvious points that we're dealing with a small faction of radicalized Islam that was actually created for the purposes of doing this. And, the other side of this is, and I want to tie a couple of things together here, because we're 30 seconds away from doing the historic third hour, and I'm not going for four. But it has to do with religion and how dangerous it actually is. I've long held the premise, and I'm not alone in this, that, for instance, Calvinism was basically a designer religion for an industrial age in Britain specifically, and that most of the religions stream off of the culture. That's how you got the prosperity preachings that took root in the 70s and the 80s and took us through Reaganomics. All of these religious systems are designed to set up that same Hegelian dialectic.
Absolutely, they're cults. You say a religious of culture. Well, that's a cult.
Yeah, it is.
Let me just say this real quick. I did a series. I have the last part to go. I survived that piece from the hard drive crash called Energy, the Creator Crisis, based on a book by Anthony C. Sutton. And all what you're saying is true. And also, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that you guys have hit a new oil deposit in the tar sands out in Alberta. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. It's ridiculous what they're doing up there, and they're destroying the environment. The province of Alberta is in the middle of some global green belt or something, and it's a black hole in it. If you look at satellite pictures, because you got to understand, Alberta's not just oil. It's also the biggest cattle farming industry in the country too.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got corporate cattle farms. The province is turning into a black hole. I lived in British Columbia for 12 years. I spent a lot of time in Alberta. I know, the province as well as Nova Scotia. They're destroying that province.
Well, but the point is that we really are reliant on Mideast oil. But of course, even now, as we go into probably another war, it's going to be about oil. But you know what? It's not about oil.
About oil, but that's what they want you to believe, exactly.
That's right.
That's the whole point. As long as oil keeps festering everybody's, hairs, then they're going to keep on doing it, because that's all they want, man. It's conflict, conflict, conflict. It sucks.
Yeah, it is.
All right, listen, Peter, I'll tell you what. Shoot me an email with your own at visitgoth@hotmail.com. I want to talk to you later, and I know Randy wants to get out of here, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure everybody else has.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
of course,
I think so.
The time has come.
And I'm not sorry for keeping you on for an extra hour, because I bet you I'll listen to it again and enjoy it too, and maybe the next, maybe you just might as well make it 3 hours.
Well, it is 3 hours now, and I'm not.
Thank you, Randy.
Hey, no problem. Viz and Gordon, hang on the line for a minute. We're going to go out on some music. And thanks to our guests online, the folks in the chat room, Jason and Peter, who came in on the phones as well. And to those of you who will hear this, it's always interesting and it's always random, and that's what we love about it. This has been the Watchman
Live. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Viz. Thanks, Gordon. We'll see you all in about 2 weeks when we come back. We're going to go out with the fix.